is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A White House National Security Council spokesman saying that they have seen nothing to corroborate the claims from Hamas that three other hostages, including an American, were killed during yesterday's raid that liberated four Israeli hostages. But they added they'll continue to assess the claims. Hamas says the operation left over 270 Palestinians dead. Israel says less than 100. Israeli Defense Forces spokesman retired Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner telling ABC's This Week,
"There is a hope that we can continue to bring home the hostages, either through negotiations or in special force operations."
President Biden on his way back to the U.S. after wrapping up his first state visit in France, attending multiple events across several days in the country. For the first time since he was convicted on 34 counts of falsifying business records, Donald Trump will return back to the campaign trail today, holding his first rally as a convicted felon in Nevada, a state the former president's hoping to flip red. This is ABC News. One man is dead, multiple people injured after a shooting and stabbing at a recreational area at Lake Berryessa in Napa County, California. The stabbing victims airlifted to local hospitals with serious injuries, no arrests. The tit-for-tat continues across the DMZ. South Korea resuming playing K-pop and radio broadcasts on loudspeakers facing North Korea. This after North Korea sent more trash balloons across the border to South Korea, where they littered the landscape. Two dozen athletes stood at the edge of glory this weekend as the Red Bull Cliff Diving Series made its 100th stop in Boston on Saturday. Spectators amazed as participants plunged into the harbor from 90 feet in the air. Competitors like Miley Carpenter say it's difficult but thrilling to take part in it.
"Everything happens very fast. You have to know what to do in just a split second amount of time. So that takes a lot of training. It's difficult just being able to adapt to the things around you."
I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
Small business owners, we know tackling your to-do list can sometimes feel like going 12 rounds against a heavyweight champ. Except that heavyweight's gloves are made of something hard, like diamonds. So when a new to-do pops up, you're like, "I can't. I'm boxing my diamond boxing glove-wearing heavyweight champ of a to-do list." At Progressive, we don't want to make your day any harder. That's why we make it easy with over 30 customizable coverage options, so you can finally land a knockout blow. See if you can save on business insurance in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party insurers.
Here's to experiencing it all this summer in Wisconsin. Every deliciously cheesy, rockin', magical, fireworks-filled, festival-loving moment. There's Cheese Curd Fest in Ellsworth, Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg, Festival of the Arts in Stevens Point, and the Renaissance Fair in Bristol. Honor the Earth Powwow in Hayward, Mile of Music in Appleton, Venetian Fest, Bratfest, Summerfest. So many fests for your whole crew. Find them all at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Political parties, candidates, and civic engagement organizers are trying to connect with younger voters in small-town Wisconsin. More from Mike Moan.
The Rural Democracy Initiative says 63% of rural youth are infrequent or uncommitted voters, and they're among the least contacted by both nonpartisan and political operations. The organization is behind a new effort to strengthen civic engagement for this demographic. Wisconsin-based groups are doing similar work. Emma Frederick with Leaders Igniting Transformation says rural college students from the western half of the state often feel overlooked.
They note that this is the first time that anyone's talked to them about voting. And while their parents might want to help or their parents don't know themselves, this is a new experience for them.
She says one of the main issues young voters from rural areas want addressed is a lack of resources in their hometown school districts. Nationally, RDI says these voters also prioritize health care, economic well-being, reproductive rights, and climate issues. Litz Crystal Egbo handles this form of outreach for Wisconsin's northeastern part of the state. She adds that in smaller communities that are becoming more diverse, there are calls for cultural needs to be considered.
They're also asking for having more diverse representation on their faculty and staff, having more diverse representation within local government and within community decision makers.
According to RDI, 24% of rural residents are people of color and many are immigrants. It also contends that young rural voters of color who lean towards pro-democracy policies are significantly underrepresented in elections. This is Mike Bowen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll start with sunshine, but a few clouds rolling in during the afternoon. Breezy northwest winds up around 30 miles per hour, highs in the mid-70s. Some evening clouds will give way to some clearing. Overnight lows will drop to the upper 40s. Sunshine lower 70s Monday. Right now it's 73.
John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Have a great weekend. Coming up on Monday, meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us to give us a look at the weather for the week ahead.
And then Chad Cornett from Cantilever Studio stops by to talk about some of the interesting work he's involved in.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 9.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Jim Santel, and yes, this is Amicus, a law review. Thank you for joining me this weekend on the broadcast stations of Civic Media as we talk, yes, indeed, about law and justice, the delivery of it, and the rule of law in America, in the state of Wisconsin, and throughout our world. Welcome to this, our weekly, our weekend venued broadcast on the stations of Civic Media. My name, once again, Jim Santel, with you for this hour and also the next hour as we talk about all kinds of things, a chock-full of substance agenda, a big syllabus, as always. It is ambitious, but it is achievable. And to all of that, we invite your comments, your questions, your inquiries of all kinds. You can reach out to my wonderful producer, Anya, or me at 855-752-4842. That telephone number, once again, 855-752-4842. Or you can go onto the Civic Media app, drop me a question, an inquiry, a comment, and we'll also consider those and make those a part of our discussion this weekend on Amicus, a Law Review. As always, our broadcast takes its name from a legal concept, and we adopt from that concept our commission, our mission on behalf of listeners and those of us engaged in these issues related to law and justice and government. Our idea for this broadcast and others here on Civic Media is to review, to examine, to do some analysis, some deliberation of those recent news items in our times in the areas of law and justice. Amicus, of course, a legal term. It's derived from the Latin. It describes a friend, thus the word ami inside amicus. That's an individual, an organization that assists in some way, promotes some understanding, some appreciation, some greater insight into some relevant issues that are the focus of attention or resolution by all of us, including our courts, our legislative bodies, our executive branches, all kinds of government and non-government entities out there. Our mission, our purpose there on this broadcast, also involving you then, is to promote that notion of information sharing with the idea that by being a friend of information, being a friend of information that is provided to you in a reliable manner, most importantly, being a friend in a way that helps you understand the world in which we live, we can provide a public service here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. As always, calling in is a good thing. We encourage that with your comments, your questions, your insights to Anya or to me, 855-752-4842. That's our phone number. And that is the way in which you can participate in this amicus discussion this weekend on those issues that animate our lives. And again, we have an ambitious, but yes, I believe achievable agenda for this hour and also the second hour. Let me talk with you a bit about where we're going. Lots and lots of things happening. As always, this is a time for Supreme Court action. We had just one case decided by the Supreme Court just this past week. It is a victory. It is a success, undeniably, for the Native American Indian populations in our nation. A unanimous opinion. We'll talk about that. And then we'll talk about other things related to the Supreme Court, including its docket. Right now, the Supreme Court has on its docket 30, count them, 30 cases not yet resolved in the next 18 business days in the United States of America, in our calendars. The Supreme Court is going to be issuing 30 opinions, decisions in a wide variety of areas. We've talked about those before in the areas of, yes, privacy rights and abortion, guns, social media, agency integrity, and yes, indeed, Donald Trump as well. Many other issues also out there on the docket. We'll talk about the significant issues faced by a Supreme Court now that in the next 3 to 4 weeks, probably at the outside, is going to be issuing this plethora of opinions that are going to be describing for us who we are and how we work and how we engage with each other for many years to come. We'll talk about that significant case from just this past week, and then necessarily return to these major issues which continue to animate not only the work and the focus of the Supreme Court, but also all of us when we think about the integrity and the ethics of the Supreme Court. Yes, that's right. Ethics once again back in the news just this past week, focusing upon the gifts and the reports made by the Supreme Court justices about how much money and how much things of value they have acquired in the past year. In the case of one of those justices going back and amending his previous reporting on the gifts that he has received. Yes, that's right. That's Clarence Thomas. We'll talk about the huge amount of money that he has gotten through gifts and other benefits during the last 20 years. It's a figure that exceeds $4 million. $4 million to one of our Supreme Court justices. We'll talk about the other reports made just this past week by Supreme Court justices about the gifts. They're required to report them. We'll talk about those numbers. And yes, indeed, we'll return once again to Sam Alito. We have talked about him in the past. He continues to be the focus of an awful lot of what I would offer to be very appropriate criticism, the necessity that at a minimum, that Sam Alito recuse himself from at least these two cases still pending before the Supreme Court to be decided among that 30 group of cases in the next 18 business days or so, in which he has plainly already expressed an opinion in support of those people who believe that the 2020 election was stolen. We'll talk more about that, the implications of what Sam Alito has said recently and in the past. Yes, it's related to these flag issues, but much more than that, beyond just those issues. Beyond the Supreme Court, of course, we've got lots of other activity that we will talk about here on Amicus during the course of our weekend broadcast. We have got other trials going on. The trial of the son of the President of the United States of America, Hunter Biden, continues in a federal Delaware courtroom. We'll talk about the status of that case and the likelihood that there will be a verdict, probably a verdict coming up in the coming week in connection with the guns charges brought by, yes, the United States Department of Justice against Hunter Biden. In another courtroom in New York City, also a federal courtroom, we know that Senator Robert Menendez from New Jersey, also on trial, not for gun-related charges, but for corruption charges, bribery. We'll talk a little bit about the status of that case as well. No verdict in sight anytime soon, but that continuing for a number of weeks down the road throughout this summer of 2024. Some other issues related to the requirement that at the end of trials, depending upon how the judge may sentence a defendant is then required to follow and execute those restrictions and those impositions made by the sentencing judge upon the defendant. We know that just this past week, Steve Bannon, previously convicted and sentenced to 4 months in federal prison for violating the fundamental right, the obligation of the Congress to summon him in. Steve Bannon, having thwarted a congressional subpoena, now found in criminal contempt of the Congress, found that in by virtue of a jury trial many, many weeks and months ago. Now we're supposed to report to prison on July 1. He will then join, not in the same prison, but in the same prison system, another of his colleagues during the course of the Trump administration. Of course, his name, Peter Navarro, the former trade supervisor and advisor there in the Trump presidency. Navarro presently serving a federal term of imprisonment, 4 months. He will actually be released from prison sometime in July. We'll talk about the reasons for incarceration, and that necessarily leads us again to the other major trial of recent times, and that is the trial of Donald Trump. We do not have a sentence yet for that jury verdict that came out of a state court in Manhattan. You know that well. For the first time in our nation's history, a former president found guilty of crimes, state crimes involving financial records and reportings and documents prepared. A case involving election interference way back in 2016. We'll talk about what may happen on July 11th, about a week or so, less than a week before the Republicans convene in Wisconsin, in the city of Milwaukee, for their own convention. We'll talk about the sentence likely to be imposed there, the options in front of Judge Mershon, and what will happen after that. And then we necessarily also have to chat during our weekend broadcast this weekend about things being said by people in positions of responsibilities. We've talked about some of this in the past, some major political people, some major government folks out there talking about reasons to distrust government, much as Sam Alito, as we've talked before, has also sent messages into our population, into our general mindsets about distrusting the basic rules and processes of government, including the justice system. We'll talk about the consequences of those repeated calls, if you will, to reject the Trump verdict and to suggest now beyond that, that there should be retribution. We're hearing these calls now about an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, that kind of thing, that in the wake of the Trump verdict, that there should be a response on the other side, prosecuting people who would be opposed to Donald Trump, whether politically or philosophically in other ways. The danger of that to America, not only sending messages that are contrary to basic civics understanding about how trials work, about how judgments are entered, about how sentences are imposed, all of that now taking up steam, taking up greater steam as the weeks go on since the time of the verdict and anticipating the sentencing there on July 11th. Lots of things going on in the criminal courts of America, including two defendants, Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, heading to prison now in execution of the sentences previously imposed upon them. We're also going to talk this morning, of course, about things right here in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about the decision by our Attorney General, Josh Call, to charge three of the architects of the fake elector scheme here in the state of Wisconsin with felonies. We'll chat about what that means. We'll chat also about the decisions that he made, apparently to this point, not to charge any of the actual 10 fake electors. All of that, in addition to some review about what our federal attorney general said to a committee of Congress just this past week. All of that and more coming up on our broadcast, Amicus Law Review. Stay with us and be a part of our discussion this morning on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, That doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. I'm your host on this broadcast this weekend. This weekend, talking once again about law and justice and the delivery of justice on behalf of all Americans. The subject of lots of controversy these days as we think about all these criminal trials going on in our nation, other trials, which we will also talk about. We're going to talk about the status of the other three trials also pending. No date scheduled with respect to Donald Trump's charges in other jurisdictions outside of New York. We'll talk about the status of those likewise in the course of our broadcast this weekend. We necessarily begin this weekend with our focus, as we've done before, on the United States Supreme Court. This group of nine people appointed by various presidents over the period of the last many decades, Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas and Sonia Sotomayor and John Roberts, the Chief Justice, among the more senior justices on the bench. Also the focus of a lot of attention in the campaign underway right now about what happens when indeed one or more of them may resign in a coming year, coming terms. Sam Alito and the others, of course, also the focus of a lot of ethics-related criticism, appropriately focused upon not only gifts that they have gotten, but also behaviors recently that suggest that they have problems when it comes to being fair and unbiased in the administration of justice. Before we get to all of that and talk about those other issues that unfortunately have clouded the work and the respect that otherwise should attend a United States Supreme Court, let's talk about what business is all about in this time of year. Every year in the month of June, sometimes beginning a little bit earlier in May, sometimes going into July as well, our United States Supreme Court begins to issue and does indeed issue a great number of decisions on those cases in which it is granted what are called writs of certiorari. We know from our past civics instruction on this broadcast that those writs are granted when the Supreme Court decides to take cases and review them, determine whether lower courts, sometimes state courts, more often federal courts, federal appellate courts, have issued opinions. And yes, the great majority of the 62 cases that the Supreme Court has taken under its wing, taken under advisement during the course of this term, fall in the category of cases coming up from the lower federal courts. And we're going to be talking more about many of those decisions in the coming weeks here on Amicus Law Review. We know as well as we do the math and we look at the decisions they have already issued, they've already issued 30 decisions up to now, and they've got about 30 more or so to go when it comes to resolving and basically bringing their docket to an end. Typically, they do that by the 4th of July, which means they've got about 18 or so business days in which to issue decisions in about 30 cases, which means there will be days in the coming weeks when we will get not just one, not just two, probably three, maybe even four decisions in one day, prompting an awful lot of people, especially when you look at the nature of those cases, the significant guns cases that are out there, these two major cases involving privacy rights, and yes, abortion back on the docket there as well, cases involving social media and the interaction between legislatures and executive branch folks and social media platforms, those are also on the docket. Of course, a lot of cases on the docket related to the legitimacy of agencies and this thing we've talked about before called the Chevron Doctrine, the question about whether or not federal courts, as they go forward, should defer when agency experts have made decisions, should defer to those judgment calls, those discretionary calls that agencies necessarily make, or whether or not the judges of our federal courts should go with their gut, if you will, and basically decide that they're going to reject the expertise and the insight, the academic bases for decisions, and go with how they feel. That issue also on the docket of the Supreme Court in at least one major case, actually two cases coming out of the Supreme Court sometime very soon. And of course, these two other major cases implicating the future of the prosecution of Donald Trump in the federal court for election interference, that resulting, of course, from the January 6th events around that, before that, after that. That's a federal indictment. We'll talk as well about the status of that and those cases coming out of the Supreme Court. And then later in our broadcast this week, and we're also going to talk about those other cases, another case pending in Fort Pierce in Florida. That's a federal case involving the so-called documents coming out of the Mar-a-Lago site. And yet again, we've got another case. That is the Georgia case, also alleging in a very sweeping indictment, great charges against many, many people, again, alleging election interference. There are lots going on in the courts. And again, some of that having to do with decisions to be made by the Supreme Court of the United States of America on immunity. Some of those courts, including the federal court in the District of Columbia, arguably now the court in Georgia, which also has before it issues of immunity, some motions there pending. All of those courts also waiting on the Supreme Court to tell us, stunningly, whether the president of the United States of America has a claim of immunity when it comes to committing crimes in the Oval Office. All of that, again, on the docket of the Supreme Court, which we will take a measure of. We'll take some inventory of that in the weeks ahead as these many cases begin to populate our news and populate our information about the rule of law and justice generally in America. Just this past week, a few more cases. I'm going to highlight just one of those having to do with our Native American tribes. The case is Becerra, which is, of course, after the cabinet secretary, versus San Carlos Apache tribe. Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, just on Thursday, ruled that the federal government, the United States government, through its agencies, does in fact have to provide additional funding to cover some administrative costs, some sort of operational costs incurred by Native American tribes. And yes, we've got 11. We've got 11 federally recognized tribes right here in the state of Wisconsin. Those tribes that operate their own health care programs, medical programs on behalf of enrolled members and others by a 5-4 vote. With interestingly, Justice Neil Gorsuch joining the majority along with the Chief Justice, perhaps the strongest ally we know from previous cases of Native Americans on the court, providing the deciding vote, the justices upholding two rulings of federal appeals courts in favor of Native American tribes. A big victory for our Native American populations coming out of the Supreme Court. Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote a dissenting opinion, joined by Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito, Amy Coney Barrett, complaining that the court's decision cost between $800 million and $2 billion. So how does this come about? Well, it turns out that there's a federal law. It's known as the Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act. The Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act. It gives Native American tribes the option, the opportunity to enter into a contract with the Indian Health Services, also an agency of the government. It gives them an opportunity to contract with the IHS to run their own health care programs, which the IHS would otherwise manage. When a tribe chooses that option, the IHS gives the tribe the money that it would have used to run those programs. And that money is what's all animating this decision of just this past week. When we're going to talk more about the implications of this decision, why it's important as Amicus, a law review, continues here on our weekend broadcast.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A White House National Security Council spokesman saying that they have seen nothing to corroborate the claims from Hamas that three other hostages, including an American, were killed during yesterday's raid that liberated four Israeli hostages. But they added they'll continue to assess the claims. Hamas says the operation left over 270 Palestinians dead. Israel says less than 100. Israeli Defense Forces spokesman retired Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner telling ABC's This Week,
"There is a hope that we can continue to bring home the hostages, either through negotiations or in special force operations."
President Biden on his way back to the U.S. after wrapping up his first state visit in France, attending multiple events across several days in the country. For the first time since he was convicted on 34 counts of falsifying business records, Donald Trump will return back to the campaign trail today, holding his first rally as a convicted felon in Nevada, a state the former president's hoping to flip red. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Brewers rallied to win again. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports. Milwaukee won 5-4 over the Detroit Tigers on Saturday thanks to the bullpen and timely hitting by Jackson Turio, who drove in two runs at the top of the sixth inning to lift the Brewers to victory. Starting pitcher Freddy Peralta only made it to the fourth inning, but the bullpen got the job done.
You know, it tells you, you know, well-rested pen, and you got Koenig, Paredes, Hudson, Piamps, McGill. That's pretty good right there. And we had Hobie in the wings in case anything got wobbly.
Bryce Wilson will pitch the series finale for Milwaukee against the Tigers on Sunday. Host Steve Stricker and Ernie Els lead the AmFam Championship at University Ridge at 9-under par after the second day. Wisconsin native Jerry Kelly, a two-time champion in the event, is tied for fourth place, three shots back of the leaders. The event wraps up today. And the Boston Celtics and Dallas Mavericks are back at it tonight in Game 2 of the NBA Finals. The Celtics have a 1-0 lead in the series. For Civic Media Sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll start with sunshine, but a few clouds rolling in during the afternoon. Breezy northwest winds up around 30 miles per hour, highs in the mid-70s. Some evening clouds will give way to some clearing. Overnight lows will drop to the upper 40s. Sunshine lower 70s Monday. Right now it's 73.
Meeting you to celebrate our great state.
It's On the Road with Jane and Todd.
We are going to be broadcasting from places where you can come as we're doing both of our shows. Say hi, and I'm so looking forward to having the chance to sit down and talk to folks.
And that's the fun part of it, is just having conversations with real people.
It's Matt and Air on Air and the Todd Alba Show together on the road.
June 11th through the 14th from 10 to 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
Do you owe back taxes? Call Tax Solutions now and get some help. For a limited time, the IRS offers a tax forgiveness program called the Fresh Start Initiative. Our team can make it easier for you to pay back taxes, avoid tax liens, and get a fresh start.
I call Tax Solutions now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Call Tax Solutions now. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Yes, okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cow's milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official mill plant. 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheese making. So did you guess? Most of our cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you! Celebrating our dairy farmers with this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Joe Zepecki here to talk about Project 2025, two women on the opposite side of the abortion issue and a way to make flying a little more enjoyable. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. I'm your host for this hour, also next hour here on Civic Media, talking about the Supreme Court in this time period of our nation's history, the time period every June when the United States Supreme Court begins to issue and does indeed issue many of its high visibility decisions happening right now and in the weeks just ahead. About 30 or so decisions yet to be decided by the Supreme Court, issued by them in the weeks just ahead. You will be hearing a lot of reporting about the issuance of these opinions virtually every week in the coming weeks. They've identified Thursday mornings as a time when many of these cases will be released, certainly in document form, in paper form, so that we can read them online and in other formats. Every so often, the Supreme Court also takes to the bench to read various portions of their majority, sometimes even the concurring and dissenting opinions. We'll see if that happens. Again, major, major things coming up for resolution by the Supreme Court in this term, having to do with, yes, Trump immunity, the applicability of a statute under which he's been charged in the District of Columbia for election interference, but also issues related to the future of our agencies in America, their legitimacy, the status of the Constitution when it comes to understanding what those people inside agencies do, how they perform on behalf of the American population. That's another big issue. There are guns cases, there are abortion cases, all kinds of things pending there, in addition to some very important social media cases also for decision by the Supreme Court. Just this past week, talking about this very important decision, a major victory for Native American tribes here in the state of Wisconsin and throughout the nation, Becerra versus San Carlos Apache tribes, talking about the interplay between this thing called the Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act and another entity called the Indian Health Services. When a tribe chooses a particular option, that is to contract and enter into contracts with the IHS to run their own healthcare program, the IHS gives those tribes monies that it would have used to run those programs. Now, there's a support system through the federal government established by the Congress and routinely operated by executive branch agencies. Now, significantly, the tribes can also collect money from outside programs like Medicare and Medicaid, and even private insurers. That's all part of the plan, part of the legislative scheme here. And the question before the court, even though it involves a lot of accounting issues and some financial issues and some things called contract support costs, the real question was whether or not this IHS has to reimburse the tribes for the costs that they incur when they spend money from Medicare and Medicaid and other private insurers on these health care programs. And in the end, a majority of the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Neil Gorsuch, Ketanji Brown Jackson, and yes, the Chief Justice, John Roberts, explained that when tribes decide to run their own health care programs, which they do, they are required to collect income from Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurers and then spend it on those programs. The reasonable and direct and indirect contract support costs they incurred as a result, this is according to the Chief Justice as he writes this, are eligible for repayment under the law. They are eligible for repayment under federal law. Why? Why? The Chief Justice tells us because the expenses arose as a result of the tribe's contract with the IHS. A lot of contract law, a lot of focus on this thing called contract support costs. The upshot is a split decision coming from the Supreme Court, but nonetheless supporting the work, the mission of our Native American Indian tribes throughout Wisconsin, throughout our nation, when it comes to providing health care. Again, Becerra versus San Carlos Apache tribe, one of the most significant decisions issued this term having to do with our Native American populations. We know the Supreme Court, especially Justice Gorsuch, has weighed in on other cases. Not surprising that he should be in the majority here, along with the Chief Justice and three others, finding in favor of the tribes. Why? Because he has always done so. He has a special place, if you will, in the intellect of Justice Gorsuch's mind, if you will. He comes from the 10th Circuit, this major circuit in the west portion of our nation, many of our Native American tribes, populations there. He has also decided these major cases coming out of Oklahoma, which we've talked about at great length, again, affirming the tribal rights, the tribal rights, the fundamental tribal rights, even some going back into the 19th and sometimes even the 18th centuries, indicating that the tribes do in fact have the obligation on behalf of their enrolled members, but also the right on behalf of the treaties that have been established to enforce those treaties. And Gorsuch has been a strong advocate in this area when it comes to civil rights and human rights for our Native American populations, once again siding with our Native American populations in this major case of just this past week. Many other cases coming up for decision. It is a source of some concern, candidly, by many court watchers that as we gather together here in what is approaching mid-June, certainly early June, Supreme Court has not issued more opinions up to this point because it means that we're going to get an almost deluge of opinions in the weeks just ahead and prior to the 4th of July, when for the most part, the Supreme Court doesn't go out of business, but begins to bring its docket to an end. Supreme Court can do what it wants when it comes to its own schedule, could in fact issue opinions into July if it needs to do that. But we know that it doesn't traditionally do so. So we are anticipating a lot of activity from the Supreme Court in the coming weeks, which we will report on and analyze here on Amicus, a Law Review. The sideshow going on at the Supreme Court continues, however, as people think about their rendition of these opinions in these major significant cases in past years, but also in this docket, the 2023-2024 docket as well. Supreme Court making these major decisions about our lives, our livelihoods, in all these different areas, while at the same time giving us legitimate reason to believe that the ethical core, the ethical basis for their doing so, simply doesn't exist or no longer exists in the way that it did in past years. We have talked a lot about this challenge to the Supreme Court when it comes to ethics, coming principally from the activities and the gifts being given to Justices Alito and Justice Thomas and to others, candidly, and their activities involving people and places and events involving cases and subject matters that they are deciding on as members of the Supreme Court. The recent issues regarding Sam Alito, which we will get back to, focusing on these flags that he and, according to him, his wife has been flying at their homes in Alexandria and also on their beach house, and raising the issue, and to my mind, not a difficult issue to resolve, about whether he should be recused in those two cases that implicate directly the notion of whether the 2020 election was stolen. Those are the two cases involving immunity, the claim by the president, the former president, Donald Trump, running for the presidency once again, to immunity for things that he did while he was in office, and also this other case called Fisher, questioning whether or not the statute under which he was charged in that federal case is valid and should support those charges. Both of those proceeding in the case charging Donald Trump with election interference. The Associate Justice, Sam Alito, indicating by virtue of flying these flags and other things that are also out there that he has support for those people who believe that the 2020 election was indeed stolen and that the product of the 2020 election was fraud on the American people. That is not just a problem. That requires not only his recusal, but also, as I've advocated candidly, for his removal, his resignation from the Supreme Court, for other reasons that we will talk about in just a few moments, going to add to the argument, if you will, that Sam Alito should no longer be deciding cases based upon his contempt for many of the basic trappings of our government, including the trappings of trial proceedings and of other things which he has been sworn to uphold. We'll talk more about that in just a moment or so. Before we get to that, however, the other major news, also a part of this sideshow, is that just this past week, just yesterday, as a matter of fact, on Friday of this past week, the United States Supreme Court, most of the justices, with the exception of Samuel Alito, releasing their financial disclosure reports. They're required to do that every single year. We'll talk about what all of them have said and not said. Sam Alito, the one who has gotten a 90-day extension to file his own report. We don't know about his financial status for this past year, but we do know about the financial status and the gifts received by other justices during the past year. We also have some other breaking news, even more dramatic than the reporting coming out of these recent reports. And that is that if you go back for 20 years, the past two decades, Clarence Thomas, according to his own reports and other derivations of those reports, other reasonable interpolations of them, has received somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 million in gifts and other things of value over the past 20 years. That is a huge amount of money. That plainly is an extraordinary amount of money in a situation where, once again, we pay all of the Supreme Court justices for their work. Here are the salaries. The Chief Justice annually gets $312,200, all right? Every single Associate Justice also gets paid just under $300,000, $298,500. Now, they can receive some gifts. They can, if in fact they're underneath a ceiling. And they're required to report those, which is what they've done this past year. Looking back on all of the reporting, including the things that Clarence Thomas has recently done to amend, to add to his past reports, things that he apparently forgot in previous years, the money amount of gifts being received by Clarence Thomas over the period of the past 20 years comes up to about $200,000 a year over and above his own salary, $4 million over the past 20 years alone. In addition to that, we've got reporting about what he and other justices, again, with the exception of Sam Alito, he's got an extension. We'll have to wait to see what Associate Justice Alito tells us about gifts that he may have received in the past year or so. But we know about Clarence Thomas and many others. Clarence Thomas acknowledged just this past week some additional luxury travel that he accepted from a conservative billionaire. We know his name. His name is Crow. He's amending a previous financial disclosure to reflect these trips that he had taken to, yes, an Indonesian island called Bali and a secret all-male club in the Northern California Redwoods. The trips were apparently taken in 2019, earlier revealed by some good journalists out there, but it's the first time that Justice Thomas, just this past week, has included them amending his previous financial disclosures. That is significant in terms of understanding what the source of income is for all of our justices. Now, the other justices have also reported on monies that they have gotten. Let's talk about all those in the interest of fairness and balance here on our weekend program. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson reported receiving four concert tickets valued at about $3,700 from Beyonce. Yes, indeed, she got those tickets from Beyonce. $10,000 of artwork for her chambers from an Alabama artist and musician named Lonnie Holly. Now, all of these disclosures, again, a part of the routine processing that the justices are required to report. Justice Jackson also reported $893,750 from an advance for a coming book, apparently a memoir that she is writing. Justice Neil Gorsuch also listed a book advance of about $250,000. Again, all these monies coming to them over and above their salaries. Brett Kavanaugh discloses a $340,000 advance payment. He's working apparently on a legal memoir that's still entitled, expected to offer some firsthand accounts of what we all recall is contentious, his very tumultuous confirmation hearing back in 2018, and also an attempt on his life in 2022. That book deal, as are the book deals for other justices, part of the public record now. Sonia Sotomayor continued to earn royalties from her books, including about $87,000 in proceeds just this past year, cited about $1,900 for voicing a character on an animated children's show on PBS called Alma's Way. It is about a Puerto Rican girl from the Bronx and her family. The narrative arc, not unfamiliar, of course, to the justice system generally, and all of those kinds of things, again, a part of the reporting coming out of the Supreme Court. These 2019 trips disclosed by Justice Thomas refer to these two excursions with Harlan Crow that he took in past years. We'll talk more about all of this and other implications for the ethical status and the gifts received by our Supreme Court justices here on Amicus, a law review.
Eagle 1490 AM.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. We're talking in this first hour of our weekend broadcast all about the Supreme Court and this report released just yesterday, just on Friday of this past week, indicating what the justices across the board on all sides of the so-called aisle, if you will, have received in terms of gifts. None of that illegal, but certainly required to report so that we know as constituents here in America, as people are on the receiving ends of their opinions, who is giving them these gifts, where they're coming from, and especially focusing once again upon Clarence Thomas. The 2019 trips that Justice Thomas referred to over and above his own reporting for the past year, these two excursions, these trips with Harlan Crow, yes, indeed, at least one case we know from the past, while the Supreme Court Justice Thomas has been on the bench, involving Trammell Crow. And the Crow of that name, of course, is Harlan Crow. He's a Texas real estate magnate. He's a donor to various conservative causes. During one of those trips, Thomas and his wife, Virginia, flew aboard Crow's private jet to Indonesia. They spent more than about a week or so, apparently, island hopping on a yacht of Mr. Crow's. Did not provide a dollar amount for that specific disclosure, but an awful lot of journalists looking at this are probably estimating the plane trip, the yacht itself, about $500,000, about $500,000 in gifts received from Clarence Thomas, directly and indirectly from Crow, his good friend, as he says. And also a second trip listed as a visit to Monte Rio, California, appears to be an excursion to something called the Bohemian Grove, an exclusive retreat on about a 2,700-acre property in the Sonoma County in north of San Francisco. Mr. Crow, also a member of that club. Justice Thomas saying that he inadvertently omitted that information from his 2019 reporting, now correcting that to let us know what, in fact, he did receive directly and maybe less directly, indirectly from Crow himself as a part of reporting that Supreme Court justices are obliged to do when it comes to monies that they receive over and above their salary. That is an important part of the function of the Administrative Office of U.S. Courts, knowing that the public is interested in these things and doing it because it does, in fact, confirm or perhaps not confirm the integrity, the ethical base of the United States Supreme Court. If indeed the members of the Supreme Court, one or more, are receiving gifts from individuals who have cases in front of them, that is not only hugely problematic, that is a basis for recusal. We have talked about that in great length before, including these issues about the 2020 election, which plainly now cloud decisions that both Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas may make in the weeks just ahead on these two major cases that also implicate the 2020 election and the involvement of our former president, Donald Trump. Let's get back to Sam Alito and talk about him a bit more. In previous broadcasts, I've advocated not only should he recuse himself, an awful lot of focus upon recusal. I would offer once again that is the lowest common denominator here. Absolute clarity that he and Clarence Thomas both, Clarence Thomas by virtue of his wife's advocacy on behalf of Stop the Steal initiatives. Both of them cannot be deciding these cases, and yet they almost certainly will. When those cases come out in the coming weeks, it will be interesting to see. We can predict it with some certainty even now, but interesting to see how those two justices, in addition to all the others, weigh in on these cases, and depending upon how those opinions come down, will give more reason for the American population to wonder whether the ethical base is there for the Supreme Court to decide these cases and arguably, by interpolation, extrapolation, whether the Supreme Court is in fact an entity of the government, the justice system, that should be relied upon to provide an unbiased and appropriate view of the law and the facts in these cases. There's more with respect to Sam Alito. I've talked about this in the past. It focuses upon the things that he has said, showing contempt and cynicism when it comes to the basic trappings of our government. We know, for example, that in his decisions in Roe, in overturning Roe versus Wade in Dobbs, a case that was decided just 2 years ago, this very month, the two-year anniversary of this major decision, finding that the privacy rights of the Constitution do not apply when it comes to reproductive rights, do not apply to abortion in America, changing the landscape dramatically that had been in place for almost 50 years in America. We know that Sam Alito wrote this in the opinion of the court. This is the law of the state of the United States of America. He said Roe was egregiously wrong from the start, exceptionally weak, and the decision had damaging consequences. Wrong from the start was Roe versus Wade. And what he is saying by virtue of that is I would offer contempt and cynicism, not only for that decision, but for all the justices who have previously gone before him, who supported exactly what he is now saying is completely wrong, telling them that they have been wrong. And who are those justices? Here are their names. Again, not identified in the opinion, but we know based upon what he has said, telling his prior justices on that court that they are wrong, decidedly so, not a close question. Who are those justices? Here are their names. And you will note among this group appointees by both Democratic and Republican presidents, Justice Blackmun, Justice Berger, Justice Douglas, Justice Brennan, Justice Stewart, Justice Marshall, Justice Powell, Justice O'Connor, Justice Kennedy, Justice Souter, Justice Stevens, all of those justices of the Supreme Court, according to Sam Alito, were egregiously wrong from the start. I would offer that that is the kind of cynicism about the past and about the institution presently of the Supreme Court that does not tolerate his continuation on the bench. You can disagree. You can express a sense of change in temperament in the court, as John Roberts often does when it comes to things like voting rights and other things, and even the notion of affirmative action in our nation's schools. John Roberts always says, well, you know, times have changed. That's not Sam Alito. Sam Alito was saying this is the way it was back then, and all these justices that have preceded him on the bench have been decidedly wrong. Justice Alito has also, of course, expressed this contempt for other things, including the systems of criminal justice during the course of the very argument that he and others entertained not too long ago in late April on this immunity issue. He's expressed other concerns and other reasons to suggest that our institutions are not valid and not strong in the United States of America. In our second hour, more of that analysis involving the United States Supreme Court, more reasons to be concerned about these decisions coming up, and then moving on to other cases pending in the courts of our United States here on Amicus, a Law Review.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm live from Madison and welcome up-and-coming singer-songwriter Katie Scullin, who performs live in studio. And I'm joined by Civic Media News Director and comedy enthusiast Terry Bell.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We're hooking you up with Wisconsin Dells prize packs, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, plus the chance to win a summer getaway to Door County, Lake Geneva, or a lake house vacation. Download the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores, find your station, and get set to text for your chance to win in this statewide contest. It's your shot to win with Scotty Summer on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.